Welcome to another episode of Pour and Tell. I'm your host, John, the Cigar Surgeon, here as always with June Lou, my co-host, What's going on, June?
What's up, man? It's allergy season.
Allergy season. I'm going to do my best to hit that mute button and not sniffle, but man, it is allergy season. It's bad.
I could hear it in both our voices.
Oh, yeah. My throat is just like, yeah, I was at a whiskey tasting last night. Yeah, I drank a bunch of whiskey. That didn't help. But yeah. Man, I feel like I have a cold and I know it's allergies.
Yeah, you just kind of like stuck right in your kind of throat right here. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, and then you just want to do whatever you can to like try to get that shit out. But sometimes you just kind of drink water and live through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little dazed this morning. I'm a little tired. I didn't get a lot of sleep. I already had a podcast, Cigar Jukebox, this morning for Game of Thrones. Nice. So I've been on all morning. It's all right. I unfortunately, the weather here is like mid 70 to 70s degrees. So I got to get some cigar reviews in while the iron is hot. But we're not here to talk about cigars. We're here to talk about libations.
Yep.
So let's kick it off. Why don't you talk a little bit about your libation news? I know I kind of go first a lot of the times, which makes no sense. So yeah. Why don't you talk about your libations for the week?
Yep. So first of all, yesterday, as the listeners know, we record these not live, right? Like we pre-record these. But yesterday, when the Warriors were playing the Rockets in Game 6 in Houston and won the series, fuck Houston, fuck the Rockets. Anyways, fuck those flopping fuckers. Anyways,
Sports Talk brought to you by.
Houston, what's Houston over? Houston Big Cinnamon Rolls. we were at a local joint with some coworkers. The place is kind of interesting. There's a couple of taps, beer taps, in terms of like there's probably like five or six, but the main attraction is they have this huge wall of bottled beers that they actually don't overcharge you to drink there. So
that's nice. That's always fun.
Yeah, for sure. So you buy it there, they'll give you a nice frosted glass and, food and all that stuff is there. But nice big TV. We drink a lot of beers. We probably had, 8-9 different kinds of beers between the three of us. And these are all big boy bombers.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so I feel this morning like a beer sluggishness.
I thought I was bad with my whiskey tasting, but yeah, no, that's a lot of beer to be doing in a single session. I assume the notes stopped around beer 3.
Dude, it went from, oh, this is good, be like, oh, let's just drink it.
Beer is so tasty.
But I think the highlight of that, interestingly enough, is one of the last beers that we drank. I don't know if it was because I was already feeling it. It was a good beer. So I don't drink a lot of Kolsch style beers. And I realized Kolsch style is actually quite, it's tasty, right? Like you don't get any of that alcohol, sting or burn taste. It's just pure
beer flavor,
kind of, clean, good beer.
Yeah.
Right. And I really enjoy that. And it was a Kolsch from a local brewery called Mission Brewing. And they're right out of San Francisco. Because when I try to buy beer up here, I try to support the local guys. So that was cool. Another thing is I threw up my second review ever for our spirits sector.
Beat me to the punch. I thought my Aberlour was going to be up there before your second review, but good for you.
Oh. We're going to get quite a few in the hopper. So, probably the Avalor is going to be, I think it's up next. But the review I did was called, was for the Old Granddad 114.
That's a bourbon.
Yep. Kentucky straight bourbon, 114 signifying the proof.
Okay.
Overall, it's an average bourbon. It's interesting because this bourbon within the bourbon, enthusiast geek community is often talked about within the spotlight of it's the most affordable high proof bourbon that you could buy. I agree with that sentiment, but I don't agree with the fact that it's not a very good bourbon. It was average bourbon, but this is a classic example of a whiskey that is too alcoholic, that's got too much of that ethanol kick, that just completely overwhelms your nose and your palate. Yeah,
cool. What about you? Well, I was going to talk about my Aberlour this week, but since the review's been posted, I'll wait until next week. We can talk about it next week, because I've got a lot of whiskey that I had last night to go through. I ended up having, it was 8 whiskeys, but there was an introductory whiskey, and then there was a secret finish whiskey. So really 10 whiskeys. Now, I went into this, because the last time I'd done this tasting, it was all Scotch. And I like Scotch tasting. I do a lot of Scotch tasting, really enjoy it. I think what made this one interesting is that the guy who was hosting, set it up as what he was going for is he wanted whiskeys from around the world. Mm. And you can do a little bit of that in Alberta, because we've got decent taxes, so it makes it easier. But some of the stuff was really tough. He wanted some whiskeys from Australia. Australia opened a distillery a little while ago, so they've got some whiskeys coming out of Australia. I think he also said, I think it's Sweden. Sweden's got a distillery going now.
Yeah, but meaning distilled and aged and barreled, yeah, and all that.
All that stuff, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Dang. So unfortunately, fortunately, because I enjoyed it, what we ended up with was a bunch of Canadian whiskeys, and which essentially is rye, Japanese, Taiwanese, what else do we got here? American. Oh, and a Dutch, which is interesting. Mm. So I'll just kind of go through the highlights. I took a bunch of notes. I think my notes became less precise as the night goes on. You can't have 9 whiskeys and write coherent, proper tasting notes. So yeah. I'll definitely be posting these. I'm not sure the format yet, but we'll have these on the site. So first up, they had 3 Shelter Points. It was interesting. Shelter Point's a young, so one of them was a whiskey, one of them was a rye, and one of them was really what amounted to a grain whiskey. And they're good. I mean, they're tasty. They're not going to be, anytime you have a grain whiskey, the big thing for me with grain whiskey is that grain whiskey lacks the depth of Scotch whiskey. Grain whiskey is meant to be, when people talk about smooth, what they're talking about is grain whiskey. They want an easy drink. And then there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that as a part of that process, what I often find is that the beverage isn't as complex as a Scotch. And so that certainly was the case. I found that, the rye was good, is all right, but it wasn't, for the money, it's not inexpensive. And that's kind of a factor of, producing distillery spirits in Canada. It was good, but, in terms of rye, I don't think it would break into the top for me. The initial whiskey, the introduction whiskey, same thing. It was, it was all right. It was pretty delicate. The one they finished up with, which is finished in a sherry butt. Of course, I'm a sherry fiend. So that was probably
likewise.
Yeah. It's a no brainer.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this mediocre whiskey is not that good. Throw in a sherry butts.
Sherry can fix a lot of problems. Now I'm going to kind of poo poo the second one. It was a stock and barrel rye. I think it's a rye. I'll have more details. Obviously, I haven't had time to do my proper prep for the show. It's a rye. Stock and barrel out of Ontario. Man,
that's out of Ontario?
Yeah.
Wait, is it the 18?
No. This is a no age statement.
Oh.
Yeah, it was, it was not good. Hmm. It was, so I nosed it and it was like immediately turpentine.
Uh-oh.
And I was just like, oh, dude. Yeah,
you're for a bad palate tasting.
And the palate matched like glue. I'll read my notes here. I mean, we'll have a review. And, taste is subjective, so I don't want to poo-poo on the distillery. But I can tell you, as a guy who does a lot of spirit tasting, it was not. It was not good. There was some light spices. But the flavor overall was thin. Like it didn't have that body that I was expecting. And like I said, there was, that acetone, turpentine, glue. A lot of people weren't a fan.
Yeah. Nobody wants to taste those.
Somehow somebody does, right? Somebody must. Third up or fourth up, I guess, was the Kura Japanese whiskey, which I've never had before. Mm. Okinawa.
I think. Oh, Okinawa. Interesting. I've heard there's, what is that Japanese brand? It's popping up everywhere, but, they claim it as Japanese whiskey, but the reality is it's actually source barrels in Scotland.
Is it the Akahi?
It might be.
I don't know.
Just
throwing that out there.
I think it's like Kuroyashi or something like that.
Okay.
But anyways, I heard it's actually not Japanese distilled barreled whiskey. It's actually source whiskey from Scotland, and then they take it back to Japan and they do some like finishing touches on it. Which I have a problem with that.
Yeah, that seems a little.
You know, yeah. Anyway, sorry. It might be not what you're having, but
yeah. No, I mean, I haven't done my research yet because, like I said, I mean, I've barely had enough time to sleep. But it was good. It was interesting. You know, it was very in keeping with Japanese whiskey. And I was kind of helping some people around the table walk through it because I said, you know, the thing with Japanese whiskey is it's got layers. It's got some delicate nature. Boy, they said a lot of smoky peat on the nose and a lot of smoky peat on the palate. I mean, if I didn't know any better, this would actually fit into either a Islay whiskey or maybe a Campbelltown whiskey in that like that really oceanside smoky, which man, that's right up my alley. And it was a lot more dominant than forward peat smoke forward than what you'd expect out of a lot of Japanese whiskeys.
That's almost uncharacteristic of most Japanese whiskeys, right? Like especially kind of like Suntory Nika, right? Like
the smoke's always subtle.
Yeah. And you definitely don't get that oceanside like that brightiness and all that in most Japanese whiskey. I don't.
So, I mean, if you like that and you're looking for that out of Japanese whiskey, I feel like Kura should be on your buying list. Again, I'll have that kind of in more detail in a review. Now I think I don't think I've poo-pooed this particular distillery on the show before, but I've had some poor experiences. This is Cavalan out of Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And I've had some really poor experiences with Cavalan. Maybe because at the time I tasted it, you know, this is when they're really putting out their first product legally. Mm. But this is the Solist. I don't know if you've had a chance to use this to try the Solist.
I have.
It was all right.
It's the blue bottle, right? It's like a blue label.
I mean, I don't know. I got a picture. Solist looks green to me, but what do I know? Green.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, I've had it. It's been a little while, but I've had it.
It was all right. I mean, it had a youthful character to it, you know, like again, you taste a whiskey or you taste a scotch or a bourbon. You can tell a youthful spirit. It's a little rough. It's a little thin. It lacks a little bit of body, but it is all right. I mean, you know, turn me around a little bit on the Cavalan brand. I was like, this is all right. I mean, I wouldn't pay the pricing because I think the bottle was like $160.
Well, that's the other thing with Cavalan, man. Like, I feel like originally when I started having them, and I've been lucky because my brother-in-law actually goes to Taiwan quite a bit for work.
Nice.
Right. So he goes to Cavalan initially. This is probably like, I don't know, 5-6 years ago when not many people knew about Cavalan. Right. And they were very nice, affordable whiskeys for the price point. Very good. But now they're coming up with all this stuff and they just keep jacking up the price like what any freaking company does. Now the value proposition is not there, and the quality isn't as there given the value.
Yeah, it's going to be
the price point.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough for me to justify that kind of. I'm getting a little echo. That is weird. Anyways,
me from me.
I don't know.
Oh, I don't think so.
It's the internet, man. Yeah, it's really going to be really tough to justify that kind of expense. You know, I can get two bottles of scotch, aged scotch, for a better price. It was interesting, though. I mean, it's, you know, that's the whole point of a tasting. It's kind of fun. Now, interestingly, number five, I had to do a double take on this. This was a Canadian Club. So you're like, Canadian Club, rye, whatever. You know, dude, this was a 41-year-old Canadian Club.
Oh,
41, well, man. Crazy.
What was the proof on that? It's got to be really low. It's probably in the 80s.
Ah, right? Man, I'd have to look at the picture. I don't think it was, well, maybe it was in the 80s. I don't know. I haven't done my proper research because
how was it taste?
It was all right. I mean, it was, you know, it was good. It's definitely better than Canadian Club, the normal Canadian Club, which is really just used for mix.
Or medicine.
Did it blow me away? No. I mean, it, you know, definitely didn't blow my skirt up in terms of rye, but it was nice to have the experience to taste it. I probably wouldn't pay for it because I think it was $260. And you know, at 260, like the value statement I said is like, that's two bottles of really good Ardbeg, you know, whatever releases. So two bottles of Ardbeg versus one bottle.
Yeah, that's like two better, like the Abenor that you could get and you could probably stick some cash in your pocket afterwards.
So, you know, again, if you're really into rye, if you really like Canadian Club, then you'd probably want to pick this bottle up because 41-year-old rye at $260, and 41-year-old any kind of spirit at $260, that is a monster steal. That should be, I don't know how they're getting away with that. That should be several thousand dollars. So
it's probably not that good, man. It's, which is probably why it's so cheap.
Yeah, it was, I mean, like you said, it's all right. You know, yeah. Above average for me. Moving right along, a Dutch rye, Millstone 100. I don't know if you've ever heard of Millstone. It was okay. I was smoking a cigar by that point, so my notes, this is where we kind of drop off on detailed notes, but I would say it was a pretty average, maybe slightly below average bourbon if you hold it up to this, or rye, sorry, if you hold it up to the standards of good rye or bourbon. This is all right. I don't think the flavor was thin. I think it just lacked a lot of nuance. And then Entrapment, which was kind of...
I've had that one.
Have you?
That's Diageo.
Is it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It was all right. I mean, it was interesting. A lot of people didn't like it. I actually thought it was quite a bit better than the Millstone. Again, I think for me, because I guess I'm a snob, it fell into that sort of above average category. You know, like if we're talking scoring or scoring systems, I think to me it's like a 5.75, 5.8 kind of thing. So decent. And then finished off with the Eagle Rare 10-year.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I like Eagle Rare.
Really winner. You went around the world.
Went around the
world.
That's
cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun experiment. I'm glad he sent it up. For the price, it was a steal of a whiskey tasting for the price, and far be it for me to turn down a whiskey tasting that's that diverse in product.
And it's cool because I haven't done a world whiskey tasting like that since, oh man, long time ago. Maybe when I went to Whiskey Fest back in in 2009.
Wow.
it's to do it proper, sitting, you know, at a table with the right glasses, right, in the right setting, and to go through all the variations of what different like terroirs and just different parts of the country brings, to do it all in one setting, it's got to be pretty cool, man. So
yeah, I mean, you know, I that's the whole point of, you know, developing palettes and doing these reviews is you really want to expose yourself to as much variety as possible. You want to move out of your comfort zone. This was probably out of my comfort zone in terms of a lot of product that I normally wouldn't go to a tasting for by itself. Like, I'm not going to go to a rye tasting. I enjoy rye. It's not something I reach for on the regular. So for me, it was a fun experience. It was a great experience. I'm glad they organized it, and I'm glad I got an invite. So, yeah.
Very nice.
Moving along, do you have any other tastings from the week that you want to talk about before we get into libation news?
I'm good.
All right, cool. Well, I'm just going to drop a bomb here in libation news. So, of course, I'm a bit of a whiskey scotch fanatic, as it were. And there was some huge news this week. Diageo, the drink giant that seems to swallow people whole, but also produces an enormous amount of spirit around the world. So, you know, give or take, whether you like them or not, they're very successful. They have submitted plans to revive Port Ellen Distillery.
Oof.
And, you know, if you're a whiskey fanatic, you know Port Ellen. They've got some legendary spirit. I was at a tasting last year, I think it was, with a bunch of like 29-year-old plus Port Ellen stuff.
Oh, man.
It was probably will go down as one of the best whiskey tastings I've ever done in my life. It was stuff that I'll never get to taste again. And really highlighted some of the most epic spirits that have come out of Port Ellen, which is closed for those who are, I haven't mentioned that. Port Ellen's been closed for 30 plus years now, more than 30 years.
Early 80s. Yeah, about that.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's unfortunate because it was a small distillery at the time. And unfortunately, the whiskey industry just wasn't doing well at that time. And so they shuttered it. But it's ironic that they've really only had monumental success when they shuttered and everyone started buying up all the casks and sitting on them and then bottling them over time. And people have been going, and myself included, have been going nuts over Port Ellen stuff. So anyways, all that to say, Diageo has forwarded some plans to revive it. They want to overhaul it. They want to reopen it. They're going to revive the old kiln building for doing the malting, the barley maltings. They're going to have the warehouses, which people, you know, these warehouses are stuffs of legend now because they're sitting at the seafront and everyone's like, oh, you know, the sea would wash over the warehouse. And, you know, I mean, people get so romantic about this stuff. And then they're going to do a new still house because I think the still house is just, last I heard, someone I know in the industry who visited it said it was just a gong show, like there was animals living in it and stuff. But it's going to be 35 million.
Well, I expect a lot of the barnyard taste out of those.
Probably. 35 million pounds. So that's not nothing. I assume it's going to be approved. I can't imagine the Scottish government would say no. No. You know, the downside, of course, is, gosh, it's going to, I mean, you got to figure it's going to be 8-10 years before they start producing anything reasonably drinkable.
Yeah. And I mean, Diageo, you know, I don't care if you love them, you hate macro companies, you're more into mom and pops and micro companies, but I mean, these guys are, the one thing they do incredibly well, they know how to market stuff.
Yep.
Right. Like the entrapment you have is Diageo, is a part of their like Orphan Barrel series, mm-hmm. where they basically say, deep into the warehouse that nobody has touched in the last 15 years, we found this 20-year-old bourbon or this 20-year-old, I think of Travis, like 25-year-old Canadian whiskey, yep. Canadian rye.
Old Scottish Charlie was at the back of the warehouse, and he found this barrel hidden under these tarps that no one knew about. Okay.
And then it's like, oh, by the way, we proofed it down to 80 proof on the Canadian rye because we want to maximize profit.
Of course they have. And of course they do. They know what they're doing. They're not, you know, like
it, marketing is amazing.
The marketing is amazing. 100%. And the, you know, you're talking about that Entrapist, even the bottle is done in a really, like, appearance wise, it's an attractive shaped bottle. They got really good packaging in the front. They know, man, they've been, I mean, Johnny Walker, like it or not, outsells everything 10 to 1.
Oh, hell yeah.
15 to 1.
You think it's because it's actually like the best whiskey out there? No, of course not. Is it bad whiskey? No, not necessarily.
But it's not worth $150, $180 a bottle or whatever they're charging these days.
Definitely not.
No.
No. But it sells, man. Those nice little labels and the bottle shapes, like the dudes love them.
So you kind of made a joke in the green room, and I certainly thought it was on point. That, I mean, how long is it going to be before Diageo claims that there's this long-lost Port Ellen barrel in the back of the warehouse? Which, for the record, so everyone is aware, there are no barrels of Port Ellen at Port Ellen, and there have not been barrels of Port Ellen at Port Ellen for 30 years more, because everyone cleared all that inventory and moved it to their own warehouses. So when they inevitably, if they do inevitably get that story, pure marketing baloney.
Don't get duped.
Don't get duped.
Do not get duped about that. I mean, it is easy to get duped for this kind of stuff, especially stuff coming at Diageo. Mm-hmm. Respect to Diageo, you know, but yeah, don't get screwed.
Taste it first. Don't get screwed. Don't pay the premium. So in other kind of, I think, really big news, and this is beer news. We haven't done a lot of beer news because there hasn't really been a lot of interesting beer news, in my opinion. Sam Adams, which is a pretty monster brewery at this point, brew organization, they have bought Dogfish Head. Now, I say bought, and people are referring to this as a merger, but it's not really a merger because they've paid $300 million US dollars in cash and stock. So they have absolutely acquired them. You can probably speak to this at a much higher level than I can because, I mean, I don't particularly like Sam Adams, and I don't get a lot of Dogfish Head because it's really hard to get Dogfish Head all the way up in Canada. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Adams is kind of like, you know, has become kind of the brand where you go to your major chain restaurant, you know, perhaps your Applebee's, Chili's, or like your, you know, whatever, like, you know, grill and bar. And, you know, you have there's nothing on the board that you want to drink because everything is Budweiser, Coors, and all that bullshit.
What about the Coors Banquet, though? The Coors Banquet.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And you're like, no, I don't want to become Banquet. So that's kind of like where that fits in. I mean, it's a very interesting proposition, right? Because the area that I play in the beer world is very mom and pop centric, local guys doing just good tasty stuff, right? Like I don't really play into the larger guys, but there's still a very, I mean, if you, I think I was like if we were to still think about this merger with Dogfish Head and Boston, this still accounts for, I think, less than like 5% of the total beer industry in the U.S. So keep that into perspective. So given that perspective, they're still craft small guys, right? They're just way bigger than most craft.
Most craft breweries out there would be less than, I bet, less than a percent of a percent, maybe even.
Yeah.
Like it's so tiny. Absolutely. And and Dogfish has been around since the mid 90s. So it's, you know, it's, they're not a new player, and they're well known in the, I'm sure I'm speaking to the audience here. Everyone's heard of Dogfish. Everyone knows Dogfish. They've made a piece, but even then they're tiny. They're so small.
Yeah. And they do great things. I mean, they're on probably one of the edge of creating experimental brews out there. And you know, some of them miss the target. Some of them are on the target, but they don't care. They love it. And it's a great thing. So I'm happy about this merger. I don't think I'm curious what they're going to do, right? Like, I mean, what else can you do? Because, you know, if you're thinking about kind of brewing approach, I feel like, you know, Boston, like Sam Adams is very different approach than Dogfish Head. Right. Yep. Like Sam Adams, they like their traditional releases, more traditional styles. They'll do some like seasonal limiteds, whereas Dogfish Head is basically a lot of stuff almost every time they come out with something, and something that's experimental and something that's like kind of cutting edge, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say the word sellout because it's just, it's a terrible word phrase, but I would say that Sam Adams was what happened to craft beer when it becomes mainstream. And to me, it's quote unquote craft beer for the guys who want to move on from the Coors Bank way, but aren't crazy enough to get into small distillery or small brewery stuff. And so they reach for the Sam Adams and they think it's hip and they think it's cool. And there's nothing wrong with that, but Sam Adams doesn't move the dial in terms of coming out with stuff that's radical or interesting. They play it safe. I mean, that's what large breweries and companies do, is they play it safe. They know what's going to sell, and that's what they focus on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope it's a good collaboration to, you know, further take a bigger piece of the pie from the, you know, the macro breweries out there.
Yeah.
So I think with that in mind, and I know both the owners at Sam Adams and Dogfish Head, Jim and Sam over there. So
they're, I know they both, and they get along well, I think, right? They're good. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think I think it's a good fit. And I'm all for, you know, taking a bigger pie out of the macro breweries out there.
I mean, you have a very good point, June. I think if they're going to be bought out by anybody, as long as it's not InBev, you know, because InBev is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, our hope is obviously that this will give them a cash injection. Dogfish can continue to do the sort of radical boutique brewery, small batch stuff that they've been doing to push the envelope. Mm-hmm. And now they'll have a cash injection to do that on a bigger scale. And, you know, honestly, if it brings Dogfish to a greater audience, then that's, I mean, man, I'd love to get my hands on Dogfish stuff on the regular. That'd be great.
Yeah. I think it could especially reign true in exporting, you know, a lot of these two breweries, or the same breweries, I guess, whatever they're going to be called now, if they do change names, to our neighborhoods, right? Like our border countries, to Asia, right? I mean, Asia has just freaking, it's just lager after lager, right? Like just stack lager on lager. So yeah, I hope for good things, man. I'm always for pushing these craft beer, man. Like, and this sounds like a good thing, dude.
I hope so.
Like you said, without the InBev thing, without, like, I don't know, like Constellation or some of those bigger guys that buy them.
Yep.
So yeah,
that's good. So we'll obviously keep an eye on that. I'm sure, you know, we'll probably get a pretty good sense of where that's going in the next 12 to 14 months. I mean, it'll be, you know, the next few releases will probably be pretty telling as to what direction that's going. And fingers crossed that hope we do well. That's all I got for Libation News this week. You got anything to report on, June?
No, I'm good, man.
Cool. Well, we got some bombs to drop next week. There's been some drama in the beer world, so I'll kind of throw that out as a teaser. We're not going to tell you any details. You gotta tune in. So this has been episode, what is this, episode four? Episode four, of Pour and Tell. Yeah. We'll be back in a couple weeks as we normally are. Thanks very much for tuning in. Of course, as we say always, you can contact us at developingpalates.com. If you have any feedback for the show, questions, whatever, we'll be glad to take those. Tip of glass. Thanks very much for tuning in.